Ability is what you're capable of. Motivation determines what you do. Attitude determines how well you do it. Hello, and welcome to episode 32 of the Same Old Wombles. We're brought to you by some of us who helped to put together Yellow and Blue back in the day. By the fans, for the fans, tonight and forever. Same Old Wombles are non-affiliated, proudly unofficial. My name is Mark Lewis. And it's fair to say that inconsistency is the only thing in which men are consistent. Tonight's panel features Adam Proctor and Niall Cooper. And on tonight's show, we'll have some shout-outs for some positive things. Yes, I did manage to find some positive things relating to being a fan of AFC Wimbledon. Not many, but some. Why, oh, why, oh, why do we continue to hand over points like confetti to relegation fodder? And a topic thought up by Matt Cooper, who is not joining us tonight, but we'll discuss it anyway. What do we think? And I'll give you three options. Was our greatest goalkeeping display ever? Have a little chat about Wish and, of course, some numbers. Welcome to episode 32.
All I wanna do is watch football. All I wanna do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them. Done what we should for the time.
Well done, Mr. Lewis. Well done. That was a glorious intro in the fine traditions of the Same Old Wombles. Well done, Mark.
I can't use George Orwell every week, you know.
Can we please just go straight to the best goalkeeping performance and not have to think, relive in any way, shape, or form what was Saturday?
Well, I've got some positive things to say first.
Go for your positive things, and then
Should I go
I'll
positive
go
first?
yeah,
positive.
it's called the sandwich.
Yeah, I know what
You
that
say
sandwich
something
is.
poor or bad or negative, you know, in an appraisal at work, you start off by buttering the person up to say, Adam, you're looking fine today, beautifully coiffured beard. Then you tell them how completely useless they are, and then you finish it off with, but remember, you've got a beautifully coiffured beard.
Yeah, we do the same for student feedback.
Absolutely.
The trouble is
how to give feedback. It's a proper technical term, actually, from Harvard or something ridiculous.
Everybody knows that now. So everybody's going like, "Oh, you told me something nice.
You
Tell me the shit
come
bit, and then
yeah,
whatever. I'll switch off at the start. I'll switch off at the end, and just listen to the middle." So for
Exactly.
those all our wonderful listeners, I would suggest that you listen now, switch off, ignore the middle bit, and then tune back in for the numbers. That's it.
I'm going to claim some credit here because I actually said on the pod on Wednesday after the 2-0 win against Warsaw that one swallow does not a summer make. Which, of course, we categorically proved by failing to follow that up and failing to do anything other than roll over and allow the
Failing.
lovely, kind watchdog people to tickle our tummy.
It wasn't even failing. Oh, my word. It was like the worst day of football for me for so long. It was so bad.
I tell you what I'm going to do, Adam, before we go into this to too much depth, I'm going to do a bit of a stats attack here that we had 12 shots. They had three. We had three on target. They had two on target. I know the major statistic, one on target, sorry, one on target, right? Whereas against Walsall, we had, I believe, less shots than Walsall, and we both had four on target, and we won 2-0. That was considered to be one of our best performances. Against Rochdale, we actually had far more statistical dominance. But just didn't know what this thing with the between the white posts with the weird netty thing on was actually for. That was the problem. So that's the statistics. Though, Adam, I was also at the same game, and it did feel like we could have played for about a month and not scored. The
I
next
don't
thing I'm going to
think.
say, the next thing I'm going to say, go on,
No, go on.
is that our first choice back four? No. Are we missing Harry Pell? Like a sore thumb. Do we need to have play two up front? Definitely. Who can play up front? Missing, we haven't had anybody there. Who's the only kind of creative people that we've got? DJ, who made his return. Pearson arguably is a little bit creative, didn't start. Up front, we needed, I'd love to see at one point Davidson and Al playing up front. Hasn't happened. So we've got a whole, this is nowhere near our first choice 11 by a long, long, long way. And I'm of the strong belief that if you were, took any team in League Two and they were to be able to go the season injury free, they'll be in the playoffs or higher, because that's the level that we're at. You take out six or seven players from any team, they're going to be struggling. And that's what's happened to us. And, you know, we're just so hit and miss. And it's really, really depressing. I'm not sure. I don't think JJ is like, I'm on the slightly leaning towards JJ out than in, but you know, whatever. Mark's clearly taken to reading the program because I'm talking to them. So I'm going to stop.
No. I think that, but the thing is, you said a long time ago about the fact about, you know, injuries and all that kind of stuff. And obviously we've been decimated in the January window, whatever happened. We've got a little bunch of youngsters who are clearly going to get injured, or their fitness is going to be deteriorated quite quickly because they're not ready in some capacity, which then suggests, well, if we're going to carry on with this kind of setup, we do need a bigger squad, because we are just going to have more players injured because we aren't capable of paying for or keeping, you know, men that don't get injured. The kind of, you know, grunt sort of players, which does suggest you need another tactic, which is a bigger squad, maybe more youngsters, and, you know, we can ride the injuries because we can swap people in and out. I don't know. But I mean,
this goes back to one of the things I think that when I was looking at it, and, you know, when we lose like that, honestly, it wipes on my entire weekend and I'm in a miserable grump. Yeah, totally. And I was just coming back to it and going, like, well, what's happened here is that we've got a real problem with injuries, and it's been consistent over the last probably three years at least. So there's got to be a problem with our training facilities or our training methods, because you should not be getting that many injuries that wipe out your entire squad. That we must be doing something wrong there. So if there was an issue that I'd have, it would be that needs sorting, because if we can make sure that we do a proper fitness program, properly look after our players and their strengths and all the rest of it, don't overdo that, then that's going to be the big that helps us. And at the moment, you know, we can't go with losing our spine, you know, and that's what I remember. That's exactly what happened when we went down. We had our injury to our spine, we lost all our confidence, and we were just shot. And you just can see some too many parallels this time around. You know, we need to make sure that those players are not getting injured, and it can't just be, you know, I mean, maybe there's a bit of bad luck, but there must be something else going on here. And that's the bit that's getting to me. I mean, like, Jesus, I mean, it's bloody depressing right now. But, you know.
Yeah, no, it's fine. No, okay, so I'll bring a positive. But obviously, the first thing is that I'm obviously advocating for a complete vegan diet that I'm sure will reduce our injuries across the squad. So that's the first thing. But no, okay, I'm going to go for a positive, because prior to 3 o'clock, I was having a really, really good Saturday. my daughter had managed to get a bunch of days off, so she's able to come to a few last games of the season. She hasn't been for ages. She was excited. There were some little tweaks to the trains, not massive cancellations, so my dad could get there early. So it's like, brilliant. We're all going to get there early. We got some train beers. I instantly spotted the Arsenal fans that had filled up the train station, because they don't wear any shirts. They all have weird tattoos going all the way up their neck, baseball caps, and obviously, like, you know, kind of designer hoodies and trousers and Nike shoes. So I clearly saw all the Arsenal fans on my train. Had a great train journey up. Obviously, Arsenal fans were drinking Stella. I had craft beer. So again, you know, just showing the difference in South and North. Anyway, so we had this great journey up. Sorry, Mark, go on. I can't hear you. Go on, say that again, Mark.
Craft beer on a train is such a man of a certain age. Carry on.
It is.
And then he opened up his Guardian.
No, well, and so I actually, I obviously have vouchers for the Guardian for Saturdays, obviously. And I was so depressed by the time I got home, I didn't bother even going to the news agents to get the Guardian, which I would have read when I got home. Anyway. I mean, if I got on the train, I would have been, anyway, whatever, right? And as you guys know, and everyone knows, I'm completely in as much yellow and blue as possible. It's obvious I'm a Wimbledon fan. Anyway, we get to Clapham, and there's a guy at the station, spots me, clearly knows I must be a Wimbledon fan, because he obviously is interested. He's like, oh, are you going to Wimbledon? And I'm going to Wimbledon. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah. And he's like, oh, I'm going to go to Wimbledon and change and do something. I wasn't sure what he was exactly saying. I said, oh, don't go to Wimbledon. Wait for the next one and go to Earlsfield and walk. It's way, way easier than doing whatever you're suggesting, which I don't know. And obviously, the walk from Wimbledon's longer, and he was talking about some change, which I didn't understand. Anyway, maybe it was a bus. So then the next train comes in, and he's going to get on it. And I'm like, oh, no, don't get this one. Get the next one to Earlsfield and walk. And he's like, oh, no, this guy's going to give me I've got a lift from Wimbledon Station. I'm like, oh, okay, cool, no worries, fine, you know, enjoy the game. Anyway, then I get to the ground. I'm like, let's go and get some food, obviously, because the food is excellent. And so Evie gets one of the Argentina sandwich things, which she really likes. I just get a bunch of those mad chips. And I go and talk to Richard on the Don's Trust kiosk. And the guy who I'd been talking to at the train station at Clapham obviously spots us, comes over and starts chatting away. I'm like, oh, hi, you know, good, how you got it here, all right, how's it going? I'm like, why are you here? kind of thing, because obviously he's not a Wimbledon fan. And he's like, oh, I'm a Southampton fan. I've just travelled from Southampton. I'm like, oh, hang on a minute. I've just come from Southampton. We're probably on the same train all the way. I'm like, why are you here? And he's like, oh, I'm trying to do all the league clubs. And I think he said he was up to 48. And so anyway, we had a little bit of a chat with Richard. And then and he said, I don't mind if I hang with you guys for a bit. And I'm like, no, my daughter and dad are in the pub. You know, we're going to the pub. So we get in the pub, obviously. And he's like blown away at this point. He's like, wow, you guys have got a pub? This is awesome. And like, he's like, oh, do you want some beers? I'm like, oh, it's fine. I'll get you some beers, you know, and you know, pointing out some things. And then I said, oh, you know, how you got the trip? Like, you know, you got a lift from Wimbledon Station. And he was like, yeah, yeah, I got a lift from Wimbledon Station. He said, the guy at Clapham who I was chatting to was Armani Little's dad. And the lift I got was in Armani Little's car from Wimbledon to the ground. And of course, he's a Southampton fan. So Armani Little was an academy player or something at Southampton. So he knew who he was anyway. So he's like, yeah, I got a lift in Armani Little's car with Armani Little's dad. And he obviously is like the first team player. And he said, then we parked up. And he said, we couldn't park, obviously, in the ground because there's nowhere to park. So I don't know where Armani Little parks. And then they met Lee Brown and walked him to the stadium. So he's like, yeah, I came to the stadium with two of the first team players. And obviously Lee Brown was a Portsmouth player as well at some point. So the whole Southampton-Portsmouth thing was kind of, you know, he was a bit starstruck. And so he's loving it, right? And then he's like, oh, I need to get something to eat. And I said, okay, look, I'm vegan, but I know that everyone, like, shouts about my pie. And so I just go and get a my pie. So off he went, and he's like, oh, do you mind if I come back? I'm like, no, it's fine, come back, you know. He comes back, Niall appears at some point. I'm like, oh, here's Niall. He's fair game, like going, look how cool we are. And he, like, this guy's loving it. He has the my pie. Afterwards, he's like, that's the best. This is the best pie I've ever had. And he's like, this is the best. You've got a pub in the ground. I mean, I've been to St. Mary's, and I said to him, I'm not a fan of St. Mary's. It's not really a nice stadium to be in. It's a proper piece of concrete. It's not that interesting. The people serving stuff don't know anything that's going on. And he's like, oh, I'm going to come again. This place, I've got to come again. It's great. There's best pie. You've got a pub. And he's like, where am I? You know, I said, where are you sitting? And of course, he's sitting in the, I wasn't sure if he's in the mood. I don't know how he got a home ticket, actually, but he wasn't in the mood. What's the other stand? The Rye stand?
Rye, the opposite side.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because he wasn't trying to pronounce it. So that's a Rye stand. And he was like, oh, I thought it was the RY stand. I was like, no, it's Rye.
Good brand identity there. Come on, man, spend loads of money on sponsorship.
I know. I was like, what? Anyway, so he was in the Rye and he's like, oh, am I in the cheap stand? I'm like, no, it's just that. I said, we can only really afford to do one major stand. I said, and all the hardcore home fans are obviously in the movers stand. And that's probably, you know, the place to be. I said, it would still be exciting and fun to be there. And so then he said, oh, what train are you getting? I said, I'll probably get this train, and thinking we might bump into him on the train station. All of this prior to 3 o'clock. So this guy, I've arrived, I've had an awesome time, the Southampton fan is obviously travelled all the way, is blown away by the club, the people, the fact that he had a lift with the first team players. It, obviously, Southampton haven't been doing very well. They went on to lose on Sunday. They're definitely relegated at this point. And I'm thinking he has had an amazing day. And then 3 o'clock, I'm like, I don't know. And of course, I left straight away after the game finished. So I never got the same train that I said I was going to get. I was just like, Evie, we're going. Like, whistle blew, see you later, bye. You know, I'm like, I never leave early, as everyone knows. But as soon as the whistle went, I'm like, that's it, done. I'm not staying for anything. And so I don't know if it actually be back, because his time was amazing until 3 o'clock. And I thought, man, as a neutral watching that game, that must have been unbelievably bad. And I don't know what the atmosphere was like in the Rye stand. But and then the last bit, this is the only other bit of the story, and then I'm done. And I can't, and there's nothing else positive to say really for the whole weekend. I YouTube, I normally watch Don's vlog. I haven't seen this week's Don's vlog. I'm assuming there is one. But for whatever reason, some Rochdale YouTuber must have appeared on my suggestions. And of course, when you run through things on YouTube, it sort of plays the first like 30 seconds, which I hate all that stuff anyway. I try and turn those things off. But anyway, I flicked over to it thinking, oh, I wonder if that's the Don's vlog thing. And then realised it's the Rochdale. And the guy's like, oh, this is going to be a terrible day out. We're going to get like beaten. What's the point of him being here? And I'm like, okay, I can't watch the rest of this YouTube video, because this guy is going to love it by the end of the game, even though the whole game was dull as ditch water. Anyway, so that's my semi-positive thing, is that people visiting Plough Lane love it, and sometimes they get lifts with the first team players.
I was waiting for a little bit of insider knowledge as to whether Armani Little really loves it so much he's going to stay.
I think he was a little bit starstruck, so I don't think he asked any questions, and he was walking with Lee Brown, Armani Little, one of their girlfriends, and Armani Little's dad, I think, but was surprised that there was no extra treatment for being able to park right outside the stadium.
Yeah, they park down Waterside Way. There's a car park on Waterside Way, which is reserved and stewarded for the players and coaches and physios and stuff. Well, that's a nice little story. My alternative story from Saturday was that I was taking my turn being Don's Trust board rep in the boardroom. Yes. Which Niall will know all too well from his time there, which is hilarious because, let's face it, both teams want to win. So unless it's a draw and it's a non-eventful draw, then actually no one's really going to be particularly happy at the final whistle. So I did it away at Orient, and the Orient chairman was good enough to say, oh, no one likes it afterwards, but it's easy for him to say because they'd won. And on Saturday, all the Rochdale guys came in and we were greeting them on behalf of the club. And obviously there were some Life Vice presidents there. And I was actually the only Don's Trust board member. So I was just, you know, being smart and polite and friendly and everything else. But they were so nice. They were genuinely decent, honest people. No airs and graces. No, oh my God, yeah, we've really got to beat you today. And it's all complete doom and gloom. But they're asking about the status of the club, telling them simple things like, the golden goals and how we do golden goals and, you know, what the arrangement is with Broncos and whatever. And they've got different arrangements. They do golden goals, but they get a company to do it for them so they don't make much money out of it and so on. And again, it was just showing all these things that we almost take for granted nowadays, which we really shouldn't take anything for granted, like our volunteers. And we know the volunteers are fewer in number than they used to be. But even so, what they do and the impression that that creates, we don't do it to make a good impression, but it's fascinating just to see the impression it creates on other people. And they were really generous. They were buying, you know, 5 golden goal tickets at a time, and also then getting stuff on behalf of the foundation for the charity auction raffle thing they were doing. And this is, you know, genuine fans who've travelled around the country, because they were all genuine fans. There's no airs and graces and big la-di-da business people. You know, there were some teenagers there with their dads who were, you know, on the board of Rochdale. And then they were obviously quietly admitting to us that they're in a position like we were last year in terms of having to do 2 budgets. Budget 1 for staying in the Football League, and budget two, obviously, for coming out of the Football League, which is a totally different kettle of fish. But they were so nice that at the final whistle, when we played as badly as we had, apart from needing a beer very, very quickly, I couldn't bring myself to be like annoyed with them or angry, because the frustration and the anger was with the team, not with the opposition. Because they were just nice people, and it was quite silly. What do you do in that situation? But well, I'm guessing on the terraces it was rather different, and in the stand it was rather different, Mr. Keeper.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's interesting. I mean, like, obviously I know Rochdale, so I speak to Rochdale quite a lot through Fair Game, so I know the guys there. And they've been through a lot of trauma, a lot of issues, and they are fairly new at club ownership, and they actually don't know what they're doing in a whole range of things. So they've got a lot to learn from us. And I think people forget that we have got a lot to give to a lot of other people that have, like, aren't taking over clubs and on a big journey. And we actually do know how to run a club quite well off the pitch. And I think people forget that. And there's an awful lot of very, very poorly run clubs that are just falling by the wayside. I mean, I find it like amazing. You know, how long ago was it then when everybody said Peterborough were the saving grace of football and they were going to be our greatest godsend and they were the wonderful thing and that was brilliant and this was our great opportunity to save everything? Do you remember that? That was like literally only a few weeks ago, all the naysayers out there. And now they're £6.6 million in debt. They're about to lose their ground because they are actually really badly run, as in fact we've been saying for quite a while. So, you know, our structure and the way we're run is exactly what the likes of Rochdale were really interested in, all the things you just said about Mark, because they're things that we take for granted. We actually do really well and we are quite effective. As a fan, my God, it was depressing though. You know, it was really hard to take. And I, you know, it was like, you just felt like we were flat on our feet. You know, it was just, you know, whatever. I mean, there were some people out there you thought put an effort in, but they just simply aren't up to it in terms of the ability in League Two. You know, I thought, you know, I mean, the best I can say is there are probably some players that might have got 6 out of 10, a couple. That's I think Will didn't do too badly. And Jack Curry didn't do too badly. And Pierre's maybe a 5 out of 10. You know, and the rest of them, you know, it was really hard to take and to watch. And that's painful.
The worst thing about having a nice seat, as I was fortunate enough to have a nice seat, not that there's bad seats in the cab stand, but when you're higher up, it's good. And there's a good view. And you can actually see, you know, you can see, for example, that the Jackson was very, very animated. But for whatever reason, that animation wasn't making any impact on Blair's. He made the substitutes early enough, but Joy Sammy and Brown, when they came on, looked like they'd been put in the team and in the squad and on the bench at least a week, if not 2 weeks too early. Because you could see there was a couple of times when Joy Sammy had the ball and he didn't trust himself to actually go in a full headlong sprint. And the whole point, and this is how frustrating it, both of the last couple of home games were, with excluding Walsall, is both Crawley and Rochdale. Crawley and Rochdale were both there for the taking. Rochdale were knocking the ball around in the first 10 minutes like a pre-season friendly, and we were not even pressing them. When we did press, I mean, lots of things can be said about Jan A, whether or not he deserves to be a professional footballer, let alone our level. That's personal opinion as opposed to anything else. But, and I know he's taking a lot of flack online, but he was trying to press, but then he was pressing on his own. And we don't have to be any kind of football expert or football scout or anything else to know that if you press on your own in a five-a-side game, let alone in a professional game in League Two, you're going to get nowhere if the rest of the midfield is just standing or wandering aimlessly left to right, right to left. So we were so timid, we didn't want to shoot. Even when they gave us the ball, we still didn't seem to want to shoot. And funnily enough, therefore, we got the square root of nowhere.
I mean, I thought that was interesting because there were bits in the game when we did press all as a collective, and we won the ball loads of times in that. You know, Rochdale were a poor side, and when we did press, that's when the opportunities did appear. We just, I don't know,
Anyway, the reason I was looking at the programme, by the way, was just to see what team did we play when we played Rochdale away. It was the game after Sutton at home, which lots of people have said is the low point of the season. Unfortunately, there's been a few of those at home. But, yeah, so the game after we played Sutton away, we played Rochdale away. We beat them 2-1. But the team was Zanef, Gunter, Callum Bai, Brown, Towler, Curry, Pell, Magoma, Woodyard, Asal, Davison.
Only two.
Exactly.
Which goes back to my point about, you know, we have not had a consistent team. We've had so many injuries, and that just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You know, that is the big problem you've got. I bet you if you looked at the teams in the playoffs and above, every single one of those, there will be, five or six players that will play like over 30 games. And how many players have we got that played that many this season?
We talked about it last week, actually, when you went on. Chislett, Zanef, and I think possibly Carey, but that's it, really.
Which is just not good enough.
And talking about not being good enough, 4 points from four home games against Rochdale, Crawley, Hartlepool, and Colchester, who are the current bottom four. And the last two out of the last three home games, obviously, against teams who were there for taking, as I said, got us nowhere. So I'm guessing that your end of the crowd was rather disaffected, as they say. The movers have been fabulous all season, the movers stand and the support they give to fans. But when you had the same players in the same formation two games in a row, but vastly different end product and, frankly, really no end product whatsoever to speak of, it's utterly frustrating.
It was just dead in our area. I mean, I was kind of dead after 30 minutes, I think, and just thought, what am I doing? You know, I was
there with my daughter and my niece. My brother couldn't make it. And, I'm still astonished that Tabs, Matt's daughter, still wants to be a season ticket holder. And Amelia's like was after asking after the game, right, we're at home on Monday, how many tickets can I get? Like, you know, I still don't get that. But I think it's because they like the whole bit that Adam mentioned. You know, the atmosphere of the ground is what's getting them there. And that's the only reason our attendances are as high as they are. Because really, you know, I remember that when I was on the DT board that we were expecting averages of 6.5. And we're what, 7.3, 7.4? That's phenomenal for what we're producing on the pitch. So that's obviously going to be helping us. But that's got absolutely nothing to do with what we're doing on the little green surface that surrounds it all. It's all to do with everything off the pitch.
I just put a little section in about expectations for the rest of the season. But, I mean, after last week, I heard this afternoon, and there's been a bit of social media about it as well, that we've actually sold out the allocation that we've got assigned to us at Harrogate on Friday, which is 600 tickets, which is amazing, and fair play to the 600 tickets, 600 people. And I suspect a number of other people otherwise who may have planned to be up there that don't have a ticket, Mr. Cooper.
Yeah. Now, Adam, right? I know you're going to have to try and edit things. So for the sake of not making you edit, just everybody else, all our listeners, please put in several expletives in this section. And then I'll just like pause for a second. Right. That's how I feel. Because me and my brother we always like choose to go to a couple of cool away games that are a bit far off. Harrogate have been in our diary for donkeys. We bought the tickets, the train tickets when they first went on sale. Right. Got those sorted. Found good accommodation. Got that sorted. We're all like well out for it. And then the news drops literally an hour before we started recording this pod saying the tickets have gone. And we're like, what? 600 tickets for Harrogate away? We couldn't believe it. Anyway, so we are currently gutted and therefore like basically trying to find anyone who can possibly get me and Matt a ticket, because we've got 48 hours to cancel our hotel. So in the next 48 hours, we have to find a ticket. Otherwise, we're not going to Harrogate.
I reckon Betty's tea rooms are rubbing their hands with glee. They'll suddenly get an influx of swarthy southern types.
Yeah, exactly. And I was well up for that. I would have spent a lot of money in your town, Harrogate, because we were staying overnight, I would have spent a lot of money. If I was Harrogate, I'd be like, why don't we just not have this bit for the home fans and give it all to these like desperate Dons fans who want to spend a lot of money in your town, a lot. And if I'm saying this, a lot of money, Adam, you have to edit this podcast to get it out really quickly so that people know that we definitely need more tickets because I'm very keen.
And maybe that'll happen. Maybe there's some way. I mean, realistically, from a commercial point of view, you'd imagine Harrogate would do what they can. And I think they may just about be safe anyway. I mentioned the four teams at the bottom there, and Harrogate have pulled themselves clear. So it's not quite as desperate for them. Therefore, you imagine it possibly is not quite as desperate for their fans to be able to see a game against a team in such wonderful form as we are. One win in 13 games.
Shocking. I mean, I hope something can be sorted out because I was like, how is it sold out already? It's a bit weird, but yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, you know, it's that kind of run of form. You think maybe people, whatever. I don't get it.
Okay, so I'm going to segue away from talking about modern football now because it's far too depressing, unfortunately, right now as a Wimbledon fan, as described and discussed. So at the weekend, on Sunday, in fact, Matt and I were both fortunate enough to be guests of the Wish organisation, Wimbledon in Sporting History. They had an event at Plough Lane before the women's game that took place against Cambridge City, which I'll talk about later. And they actually got together in the Phoenix pub before the fans came to ground, and they did some mementos and some speeches and some thanks to some of their Wish volunteers who work very hard in different lots of different projects. And hopefully we can get somebody from Wish on between now and the end of the season to be able to talk about them overall. But one of the things they also did is they managed to get some of the original Batsford boys. Now, some people listening to the pod may know who we're talking about. We're talking about the players that played for Alan Batsford in the early 70s at Walton and Hersham and then came to Wimbledon in the summer of 75, I want to say. 74, 75. And 74. Dave Bassett was part of that group. Kieran Summers was part of that group. Billy Holmes was part of that group. Ian Cook was the captain of that group. And a certain bloke called Dickie Guy was in there as well.
Dickie Guy did not come with Batsford. He was already at the club.
Ah, my apologies to Dickie.
But anyway, they were reminiscing about
loads of stories that they did and loads of general antics they got up to. And they were talking in particular about the famous games which people can look up if they're too young like us to have ever seen them live, namely the FA Cup run that we, as a non-league team in the equivalent of what is now the conference, we did from the very first qualifying game onwards and ended up playing Burnley, who were at the time in the top eight of the top division, what is now the Premier League. And they played Burnley with lots of various internationals away at Turf Moor and beat them. And then they went on to play Leeds, which is a very famous game, which was televised. And Dickie Guy, again, was an extremely stalwart in goal and saved the penalty from Peter Lorimer, who was one of the top Scottish internationals, as well as half the Leeds team at the time were Scottish internationals. And that gave him international acclaim. He was on the Big Match, which was the key show that you can now see Big Match Revisited on ITV4, if you want to record that on your digital box. But the point of all these stories is it got Matt and I thinking, what was the greatest goalkeeping performance, individual goalkeeping performance that you've seen from a Wimbledon player over the years? You could come up with countless examples, but the three I've come up with, which kind of span different areas, so most people listening to this and the three of us here will have either seen these performances or they will know about them. The first one is the one I just mentioned there, which is Dickie Guy at Turf Moor Burnley, January 1975. And the quote at the time from Dickie Guy was, "It was real back-to-the-wall stuff for pretty much the whole game. I was a lot busier in that match than when we played Leeds in round four. The sad thing is, no footage of the game has ever been shown. Did you know that?" Apparently, Bob Lord, who was the then Burnley chairman, felt there was too much football being shown on television in 1975. What would you think today? So he refused to let the cameras in. So this wonderful performance by Dickie Guy, no proof of it. No, apart from in the eyes and the memories of the players and anyone who was there that day.
I've seen I'm sure I've seen a McMahon goal.
McMahon was the guy who scored the winning goal. That's right. Well, if you have, Niall, then you dig it out for someone and for posterity.
I'm sure I've seen it. Oh, well. Go on, that's your first one. What's your second and
first
third?
First one is that one. Second one is rather more familiar to most people of a certain vintage again. And this was definitely on TV and on DVD and everything else. And we've all got things around our house, those of us that were lucky enough to be there as teenagers or younger people. And that, of course, is Dave Besant at Wembley in 1988, in May 1988. Found a little news cutting online about that, which quotes Besant giving a performance which put even that of Sunderland's Jim Montgomery 15 years ago against Leeds in the shade, ensuring his team won the cup. And again, you have to be of a certain vintage to remember Jim Montgomery. That was the 1973 FA Cup final when Sunderland were very, very much the underdogs and managed to beat Leeds. But of course, that's the crazy gang in the Culture Club, as was quoted recently when the late John Watson passed away. So that's number two. And the final one, choice of three here, the final one is much more up-to-date, much more contemporary. And that is, of course, Aaron Ramsdale. Aaron Ramsdale as a loanee playing against Luton Town at Kenilworth Road, April 2019. And the quote from that match report from the Luton website is, the home side could have been out of sight this evening if it had not been for some stunning saves from Aaron Ramsdale to keep his side in the contest. Now everyone knows who Aaron Ramsdale is. Now everybody knows that he's obviously, as Arsenal number one and England squad player, one of the best up-and-coming goalkeepers in the country. At the time, barely anybody had heard of him. I certainly, when we signed him and we lost 4-2 on his debut at King's Meadow, I remember talking to his parents and they were very, very glum, but very, very happy because he'd obviously got an opportunity and look what it took him and look where it took him to. So what do we think, boys, of those three opportunities spanning 40-plus years?
Okay, I'm going to talk about the Besant one first, and I'm going to throw in another weird one as well. Now, in that cup final, it is not the penalty save that I think was the most crucial save. There is one earlier on where it's John Barnes. It's come through, and the ball is basically hanging up. Besant's on the floor. It's hanging up kind of directly above Besant's head, and John Barnes is coming down. John Barnes was the player of the decade, right? And somehow Besant managed to claw this ball away from John Barnes, like in the first half, before the penalty, before we'd gone 1-0 up. And that, for me, was the save of the match. He was on the floor, like spread out, and he managed to get it. And that, for me, was the moment. So I think that's a phenomenal save. Then, obviously, look, I remember Luke Garrard putting on the gloves. And I loved Luke Garrard when he put on the gloves. Just because Luke Garrard was like, one of those players that just at the time epitomised everything the spirit of that club was about. Yeah, he was just brilliant. I at the time was just a bit of a weird one. The boss of Luke Garrard's best mate's girlfriend, right? So I was getting loads of stuff about Luke Garrard and what he really thought about the club. And, Luke, that girl's now married, and he was the captain of Bournemouth, and they ran the team for a while at Bournemouth. So, but Luke Garrard in that performance, I think we won the game 3-0 or something, 3, whatever it was. He didn't concede a goal, but he was just like, just the kind of spirit of that sort of player. I loved that. So I think that for me was another, I know not the right sort of goalkeeping that you're talking about, but that for me was one. I do remember that both those other examples, you'd be hard not to push Seb Brown in the Luton playoff final as another, because he did all his homework, and still I remember those saves. But it's really easy to remember the penalty saves. Those are the ones you remember, I think, most of it, out of anything. I don't know. Adam, what do you think?
I would go with the Dicky Guy one, just because I think that it just kind of that changed a load of things, and it was, you know, I think the Besant one obviously is historically really great, but like you say, because obviously it was the first save of a penalty in an FA Cup final, but was it the best save of the match? Was it the best part of the game in that sense? Probably not. Yeah, I'm going to go with the Dicky Guy one, just because I think there's more going on there. I think that was cooler and more interesting and a different time.
I'm just trying to think of many other goals. You just need to go through, like, the best. I mean, like, or to the other one, Hans Seegers on his debut.
Better than Stephen Gerrard, twice as often.
Right? Because what he did in that first game.
I was thinking there'd be a Hans Seegers one somewhere in the mix, but
Hans Seegers was on his debut. We'd just sold Besant. We'd had a couple of other. Simon Tracy had a howler in his first game.
One green.
Well, no, let me go for it. Simon Tracy was in the first game, which was 5-1 against Arsenal. Ron Green came in for the next four, right? And neither of them were any good. And then Hans Seegers comes in and we're playing, I can't remember, Everton or something like that, at Plough Lane. And we really missed Dave Besson and his kind of iconic things. What Hans Seegers did was whack the ball from outside his area, rolled the ball outside his area, whack the ball really long, bounced forward straight onto Fashanu, whacked it in. It was like, we'd missed this in those five games, this long ball, excellent stuff. And here we have Hans Seegers, instant hero, because he did that. Yeah. You know, and that for me was like, and he, you know, just this kind of style. I mean, Hans Seegers has got a load of other issues. But for that, that was an iconic goal. Iconic goalkeeper. Yeah, I know, Mark. But I mean,
it's all right. Well, Adam can get the clips of that goal and that setup, as opposed to the clips of anything else that you might find online for Hans Seegers.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing with Hans is that I met him in my early days as a football reporter afterwards at Spurs and spoke to him about a few things when he was goalkeeping coach there. You know, I mean, there's definitely an element of like he loved Wimbledon and he loved what he did at Wimbledon. But there was a moment when he fell into the wrong crowd, and there's a certain group of people that included one person who actually was kind of very, very, very senior up in the club at the time, and a couple of the players. And it was kind of common knowledge that as soon as you were in that little group, then there were things going on that you didn't want to know about. And that's the case. I'm so being so delicate.
Niall managed to libel himself.
I'm trying my best not to here, but that was kind of, there was a known group. There was a known group.
And that was me thinking we're reminiscing about nice, good old days, as they say.
No, I can talk about the good old days.
Are you voting, if Adam's voting Dicky Guy, are you voting Besant or are you voting someone else? You're voting Ramsdale.
I loved Ramsdale, but see, it's difficult because I love them all for different reasons. It's hard not to go for Besant.
It is hard not to go for Besant, but that's obviously the rose tinted thing. But that's part of what the Seymour Wongs is all about.
Yeah, but then if I'm going to flick it the other way, I also remember Besant, and it hit the post, so it wasn't as bad as it could have been. But like the ball was rolled back to him against Watford. Literally soft as, and it went straight through his legs. And he was like, say, 8-9 yards out, and he just turned around and tried to run back. And we are very lucky it hit the post, because he would have looked like a complete donkey for that.
Right. Check out the BBC website today, Der Klassiker, which is Borussia Dortmund against Bayern München in the top two teams in Germany. At the weekend, the Dortmund keeper, bearing in mind at this point Dortmund were top of the table with Bellingham parading through midfield, the Dortmund keeper did exactly that. Straightforward, ordinary back pass rolled to him, which he completely air kicks about 15 yards out. It's on the BBC website. And it just rolls into the net with Leroy Sané just running alongside it to make sure it goes in. Bayern were 4-0 up inside 20 minutes, and they won 4-2. So it happens to the best of them. But I'm afraid I'm getting casting vote on that one. I'm taking Dicky Guy as well. Partially sentimental, because I still think it's amazing, you know, that he is obviously El Presidente, as they call him. But he represents the club so particularly well. He's at all the different events. He's had some very serious health issues recently, but he's back fighting fit. And there he was. Everyone was wearing relatively casual clothes at this particular event yesterday. And he's quintessentially there, shirt, tie, Wimbledon tie, you know, representing the club absolutely immaculately. So, and of course, he's also a Freeman of the London Borough of Merton, which I discovered yesterday. I didn't know before. So that was good to know. So that's a good segue. We will talk about other greatest of in future episodes. If anyone fancies talking about the greatest striker or the greatest goal or whatever, then it's all very subjective, but that's the whole point of a podcast, isn't it?
We could do the greatest ever handball given away in your own area twice in a game at the end of a particular season. Talk about that. Could talk about that, because that's not in any way
against Sheffield United.
Previous conversations.
That's not what we mean at all. Stop putting yourself in a hole, Mr. Cooper. What I did want to do, though, is just very quickly talk about Wish. As I say, we'll get somebody up from Wish on, but the Wimbledon in sporting history people are absolutely fabulous, and they've supported a number of different ventures. They were obviously instrumental alongside Mr. Matthew Cooper in terms of putting together the mosaic that's up on the wall there in the Kappa stand. And they're also working with Matt. And of course, he's not here to reflect on his glory, but Matt's crowdfunding project has been successful. So I suppose, Niall, you can talk a little bit about what that was and how he's got on and when the play is actually going to take place.
Right. I believe it's between the 23rd and 26th of June. So it's now this is going to be something that's going to be feel good, because it's about talking the journey that created AFC Wimbledon. So it's right that bit, beginning bit. Obviously, there's a great, we all know the ending of like when, you know, from when we started, but it's just having that all back. And I think it would be fantastic to, I think, to get loads of the kids from the local area, loads of people like that, get that whole community vibe in there to realise what a story it is. Because we forget about that. We all moan about where we are now. But the journey that we took in those 12 fateful months was amazing. And that's what the play will reflect. I think it'll be absolutely brilliant. I hope that everybody goes along and sees it, because it's just be, you know, it'll just remind us about why we're here and what we've achieved and why we are so unique, which we can tend to forget. So I think it's been brilliant. You know, I've read a few little tidbits, because obviously I'm his brother. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing it on there. I just so hope he films it, because the last couple he didn't film. And so it was kind of lost for prosperity. But I really want to hope this one gets filmed and you know, loads of people can watch it. It should be fantastic. I'm not sure when all the tickets will go on open sale, but they should be available really soon. I think every podcast between now and then we should be plugging it. But yeah, it'll be brilliant.
Sorry, were you lucky enough to see the play when the play was performed a few years ago?
No, but I got a ticket for this one.
Well, hey, yeah, then you've got a treat. You've got an absolute treat in store, because I know he's rewritten it, but the original had some lovely, amusing characters. There was a Mr. Fran and a Mr. Chies, for obvious reasons, but apparently he's taken those ones out now and added a little bit more in terms of the historical stuff, which is nice. But yeah, a lot of the time we lose and we forget, like I said earlier on, with regards to the impact that our volunteers make on the Euro of Rochdale directors. But we do lose sight when you've got, unfortunately, some abject performances on the pitch. You lose sight of all the different things that have been achieved and the amazing work that was done and was done particularly well and faithfully by lots of individuals, and that came together obviously with the Don Trust being founded and the Don Trust board forging that on. So it's called a fans club. If you look up a fans club on crowdfunding, then you'll be able to find some details about that and be able to pledge yourself to get a ticket. Hopefully it's been promoted in the program, it's been promoted on the website as well, so thanks to the club for doing that as well. And it is one of those collaborations between Matt as just an ordinary fan, but also Wish, with the connections with Wimbledon sporting history and the football club itself, and fingers crossed, it'll be a roaring success. That's all I have to say on that one, really. But I wanted to do a couple of positive shout-outs, because I missed it. I mentioned I went to the Wish event, and then I went to a ladies' game. So we've been talking about the ladies for the last few weeks and how well they've been doing. I finally got to see a ladies' game, when I didn't actually have commitments watching and ferrying my son around Surrey to watch him play rugby. So I saw the ladies play Cambridge City yesterday. Relatively similar in some ways to the men's game the day before, in that we had lots of possession and didn't do very much with it. And then after about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, we had a shot. It's like, really? What's this all about? Goalkeeper spills it, someone follows up and scores, and we are 1-0 up. And then about 10 minutes later, so 35 minutes or so into the game, and we're sitting in the right stand, which is actually quite a lovely view. And when the sun's out, as it was yesterday, it's beautiful, beautiful scenery. And the pitch still looks really good. Central midfield player, I forget her name now, but central midfield player takes a pot shot from 35 yards. What's that all about? What are you doing that? And you take a pot shot from 35 yards in a women's game, and you're usually, if you can get it on target, going to stand a fair chance of getting it in the net. And she put it in the top corner, and great goal, great finish. And we finish up winning 2-1. Bit of a disjointed game. But I did read afterwards there was a player who's just come back to the fold, having had 5 years out to have two children. And fair play to her that she's come back and rejoined the team. The ladies seem to be doing really, really well. I think they've got two games left. It looks like they're going to just fall at the last hurdle and finish second behind Hashtag, because Hashtag just don't look like they're going to lose a game, unfortunately.
How close is it, Mark, at the moment? Because I keep on looking. I mean, because we drew that game, and the draw was the one that came back a couple of weeks ago. It's pretty the one.
I think they're a point ahead, but I think they've also got a game in hand. Hashtag, I've got three games left. We've only got two. So you're really relying on them to trip up overall. But from what I can gather, we've got a squad of about 17, and we've got five long-term injuries, which doesn't really help whatsoever, which is why they've had to get this former player, Kelly Jade Whelan, back in their squad. They've got someone on loan from West Ham as well. So the resources are stretched, much like the first team on the men's side as well. But they are in a cup final. They are in a cup final on Wednesday, the 27th of April, against the Arsenal Academy team away at Hounslow, which I suspect won't quite be as salubrious as Ploughland. But if anyone is able to get down there, I know there's some very loyal volunteers to follow the ladies here, there and everywhere, and give a lot of time and effort and obviously their own time and energy as volunteers to be able to support the ladies. So if anyone could give them some support, they were really, really engaging. There was a number of children there. It was a bright, sunny afternoon. It was just a pleasant experience, really. I mean, I got to see a team at Plough Lane playing in yellow and blue, winning a game. That was quite pleasant. But the whole thing was really pleasant. And after the game, they all came over and signed autographs and high-fived all the kids and posed for selfies and stuff. It was just, that's part of what a proper community club should be. It's not just about what the men do on a Saturday afternoon. That's vitally important. And that will always be the most vitally important thing. But there are lots of other aspects to it as well. And fair play to the women. And fair play to the club for obviously supporting them and keeping it all as one cohesive action.
I totally agree. And I fully back that up. And I think, you know, it is always going to be the aspiration to have, you know, and there's always going to be difficulties. And I know the whole stuff, having sat on the board. But it would be lovely to have the women's team permanently based at Plough Lane. I think that's got to be a long-term aspiration, because the women's game is blossoming, and it's just gutting that you happen to have a team like Hashtag United in the same league as us. Because clearly, when you've looked at the cup games, we're more than capable of not only holding our own, but thriving in the league above, which is a bit of a frustration. But that's the way that league setup works, which is annoying. But you know, I think you know, we should be backing them, because you know, particularly now with the results so poor in the men's team, you kind of think, well, should I be doing Mark and turning up on the Sundays to watch the women's team win? But anyway, I shall pause on that. But well done to the women. I think they're fantastic beacon for what we should be doing.
Uh, day after the last of their season. So the Sunday the 30th is their last game, 2 o'clock kickoff. So if you can come along to that, then so much the better. There's also a Don's Trust SGM the day off, the hour, so following immediately on after that particular activity as well. Lots of activity going on the Plough Lane that day too. So if people can get down there on Sunday the 30th to support the women, then that would be great. Mr. Adam, I'm going to try and give you a really straightforward number this week.
Yeah.
I'm going to try, I said, you know. For those of you who can't see the Zoom call, Adam's already like got his head in his hands as if it's the hardest thing I'm ever going to come up with. This was featured on last week's pod, so fingers crossed Adam will remember. Okay, Adam's number for this week is number 9.
Come on. 9? And it was featured last week. Oh, my dog's annoying me now, unfortunately. 9.
Is it?
Featured on last week's pod.
That was only Wednesday, Adam. That's less than a week ago.
Yeah, I've had a bad weekend. 9.
Is it a very bad Beatles song?
I think that's a harsh description of the songs on Abbey Road and the end of the Beatles' career, frankly. But no, it's not a very bad Beatles song. It's relating to our performances, our achievements as a football team in the last couple of years.
In the last couple of years, 9 is that number of wins we've had since 2020, since we've been back at Plough Lane. Number of wins at Plough Lane since we returned to Plough Lane.
Not quite, but I'll give it to you. It's the number of wins at Plough Lane in the last two seasons combined. 2 last year and 7 this year, including the Warsaw win, which is as awful as it sounds. Okay, Niall's number. It's a little different. Niall's number is 46,757.
Wow.
And this was featured in a tweet that I sent you guys the other day, as most of the numbers usually are.
No.
Oh. You've got the worst numbers players on this week's podcast. Do you know that?
46,756. Yeah. What could it possibly be? Is it the number of fans we've taken away collectively combined?
We're very good, and I think we've taken more than that. But that's not a bad guess, to be fair.
That is a good guess.
If I tell you that only 6 clubs in League 2 have spent less than this on the same item.
Agents' fees.
Agents' fees, yes. So it was released the other day as to what level of agents' fees all the clubs in League 1, League 2 had paid in the last season. I'm not quite sure exactly what data goes up to, but listing the whole... I'm sure Adam can find the link and put it on the feed for this week. But overall, we had paid out that sum that I mentioned, 46,757, and only 6 clubs in League 2 actually paid lower agency fees than that. I think Crewe Alexandra were the lowest, actually. Stockport County, who are doing all right, but probably going to miss out playoff-wise, or possibly just about scraping the playoffs. Stockport County paid £236,944 in agency fees, which, quite apart from being about 9 times as much as ours, obviously is a considerable amount of money, which has got to come from somewhere, and I guess it's coming out of their playing budget overall, which is their particular choice to do, and we don't know what their playing budget is as we stand. But interesting nonetheless.
Just to add to that.
Correlation again between agents' fees and placing the table.
I was going to say, Mark, that the other thing statistic is the amount of agents' fees paid in the Premier League is obviously more money than the Premier League gives to all of League 1, League 2, National League, National League South, National League North, and all the women's game put together. That's just agents' fees in the Premier League.
We expected that, yeah. To be fair.
I think it's 53 million.
So I'm going to wrap it up there. I'm hoping that Niall and Matt do manage to get themselves up to Harrogate and do manage to get a ticket. Because if they do, then maybe we can do a little impromptu Samuel Wombles podcast on the road from two fans who were at the game and the rest of us that weren't. But we'll see how that goes. Otherwise, we will see you on cinemawarmals.com. Episodes out usually every Tuesday morning. Thank you to Niall. Thank you, Mark. Mr. Adam Proctor. Not jet-lagged anymore. Thank you to Adam's dog. It's very, very cute, for those of you who couldn't see on Zoom. And we'll catch up with you guys on Spotify. Otherwise, we will see you all soon. Thank you for listening, and good night.